Welcome to the Landlord Diaries, where we talk about midterm rentals and the opportunities behind them. We'll share landlord stories, talk about maximizing investment potential, and discuss how to live the very best landlord life. This podcast is proudly brought to you by Furnished Finder, the leader and largest online marketplace for midterm rentals. Remember to like and subscribe if you enjoy our content.
It's your host, Kelly Bailey of The Landlord Diaries. We appreciate you guys being here. We love reading your five-star reviews, and we just are so encouraged by each of your stories. If you have a wonderful story to tell from a state we haven't heard from, please reach out to us. And my wonderful co-host, Katie, our marketing director, both of us midterm rental investors with, we're growing almost 10 properties each, somewhere between 5 and 10. What did you think about today's episode?
Today we get to talk with Jaina, and Jaina has gone down the route of co-hosting, which is something we probably have not talked about enough, but is a really interesting and creative way to get involved in midterm rentals if maybe you're not quite ready to have your own. And it's something that listeners who are perhaps interested in the idea of co-hosting or busy landlords who maybe need to take a little bit off their plate could listen to and benefit from today. I've heard a lot about co-hosting when it comes to short-term rentals, but not as much in the midterm rental world. So it's something unique to think about and can give relief or opportunity to people in a lot of different ways. So definitely check it out. We can't wait for you to hear this one and hear what Jaina has made happen in her world of co-hosting.
Enjoy. Today, we explore the world of co-hosting with Premier Host Management. Jaina Palasigi and business partner Paul De Mesa live in Orange County, California, and originally tried Airbnb arbitrage in their backyard, but were not successful. This led to a new strategy managing midterm rentals remotely in Houston, Texas, Benton Harbor, Michigan, Montgomery, Alabama, and San Diego, California. Jaina, thanks for being with us today. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you so much, Kelly, for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yes. So just so we don't lose you guys along the way, we've got a couple main topics we're going to cover in this episode. We're going to cover the ins and outs of co-hosting by going over Jaina and Paul's personal and co-hosting portfolios, how they built their partnership and found clients, smart features available for co-host professionals, and Jaina has 30 hours in a ChatGPT prompt engineering course that saved her $13,000 on one specific example. So all of this we're going to cover today and a lot more, I'm sure. So let's start off with what, Jaina, in your opinion, what is co-hosting and what does the relationship typically look like with the property owner?
Sure thing. Essentially, co-hosting is property management for owners who have properties that they either want to turn into a short-term rental or a mid-term rental. So when you're a co-host, you don't actually own the property, but you manage it on behalf of or with the owner of the property.
Mm-hmm. That's good. And correct me if I'm wrong, and this is not legal advice for anyone, but co-hosting is a way to kind of work around property management laws around the country, right? Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Not from a legal perspective, but from your personal experience.
From my personal experience, initially when we were saying we're doing property management, we found out that there are certain licenses that you need to have in order to be an official property manager. There's also different routes when it comes to receiving money and how the money is held in certain situations when you're getting paid rent from the shorter midterm rental. So that's why co-hosting, although a lot of people don't realize it's really just property management, we can't use that actual term in what we're doing. So that's why it's really essential that people understand it's basically the same thing going on, just a different name.
Like the ins and outs operate a little different. We can get into those a little later. Katie, what's your first question?
All right, so let's jump right into my favorite question because I think it gives everyone such a good background on our guests and what you're up to. So tell us about your portfolio, what properties you have in it, maybe which ones, you know, if any are your own or if you're all co-hosting. Break that down for us.
Absolutely. So we have currently four properties in our portfolio. The first property we got was in Benton Harbor, Michigan. And the way that we found that owner was through a Facebook group. Then after that, he actually scaled and got another property with a different partner. And that second property that we have is in Houston, Texas. All our properties are co-hosted right now. So those are the ones that are actually live and listed. Then we have two more clients that are in the process of getting listed and transforming their properties into midterm rentals. We have two in Montgomery, Alabama. It's one property, but there's an ADU in the back and a main large house in the front. So our strategy with that is we're going to use the ADU for short-term rentals and then the main house as a midterm rental. And this main house is crazy. Like, Southern homes are so beautiful and intricate that it could technically be split into even three more properties that are all midterm. But we're keeping it simple, just trying to get it onboarded. And then the fourth property is in San Diego, California. That one's also going to be a midterm rental. What's unique about that? It's actually owned by my friend. And her and her husband live on the bottom unit, and then they want to rent up the top unit as a midterm rental. It's a 1940s home. Essentially, everyone kind of has the same kind of house on the same street, and everyone essentially does a long-term rental or midterm rental in that area.
Nice. Love it. Ooh, that was a really good summary of a portfolio. That might be our best summary yet, Katie. What do
awesome.
You think?
Awesome.
I love a good summary that gives us all the key points and just, you know, quick and dirty. Let's go.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the two that are live. You describe them pretty well, and you've kind of given them both their own theme. So let's talk about the Houston, Texas theme and the Benton Harbor, Michigan theme.
Sure thing. So with Houston, Texas, the actual location of the property is quite near to NASA. So when we were talking to an interior designer when we started to design the property, he had this idea of, okay, it's in Houston, Texas, close to NASA. Why don't we do a space cowboy theme, right? And I was like, that sounds fun, right? I would love to do ChatGPT stuff with listing descriptions, having that space cowboy theme, and obviously it being very unique. And the reason why it's important, obviously we know design is really important, but this particular property is a hybrid strategy. We use STRs to kind of fill in the gap between the midterm rental stays, and it's absolutely well-designed. It's beautiful. I mean, it fits incredibly with the space and cowboy theme, and everyone tends to enjoy it. So that's our property in Houston, Texas. It's more specifically near the Clear Lake area, so it's closer to the bay. So there's a lot of different things that they could do to make it an essential short-term rental, not just a midterm rental.
Hey, everybody. Katie here. I'm just going to interrupt this episode really quick because Jaina's talking about her space cowboy-themed property. And this is the perfect example of stuff that you have to get amazing pictures for and be able to show off your property. Within Furnished Finder on the resources page for landlords, there's even an ebook that we have made to help you navigate your way towards the best property photos ever. So be sure to check it out. All right, let's get back to it.
For Benton Harbor, it's the complete opposite. Honestly, it's grandma's house. It is what it is. But guess what? Grandma's house performs. It really does. And I think it's because of the particular location. For Benton Harbor, Michigan, we do exclusively midterm rentals. There's no way it could rent out as a short-term rental the way it's designed. Although it's relatively close to St. Joseph, which is more of a up-and-coming kind of hipster area, just 10 minutes away, closer to waterfront areas. But with Benton Harbor, what we've exclusively been getting are clients who have been placed by insurance companies, as well as companies that do construction there. So we don't get any travel nurses. We don't get other things except for basically business to business days. And it's been incredibly successful because it's a larger house and there really isn't that much competition in that particular area. So we've just been shocked when we first saw the pictures of the inside of the house because the owner already had it furnished, how well it performed. It's just been a huge blessing in disguise. So really good property as well.
Awesome. Love that. Anything else about the portfolio you want to talk about, Katie, before we move on to the, like, 3 to 5 years before where we got to where we are now.
No, let's do it, man. Let's go back in time.
Yes. It just happened. The movie said, 2 years earlier. Or, Jaina, how much was it? When did you start this journey and discover you didn't love short term by itself? You moved to midterm. How long ago was that?
The end of 2021.
Okay, there we go. So we've gone back about 2 years, right?
Yeah.
I hope my math
exactly.
was right there.
You're good. Perfect.
So it all starts with building the partnership, right? So you and Paul, what's your story?
Sure. So Paul and I go to the same church, and that's where we met initially. And he's younger than me. He's about 6 years younger. And I remember him saying, oh, I just bought a house in Evansville, Indiana. And I was like, you bought a house? And he's like, yeah. And that just really intrigued me because during that time, obviously COVID kind of gave me the fuel to start learning a little bit more about real estate and then also finances in general. And then so when Paul said that so nonchalant to me, I just was really drawn to him. And I thought, well, if he could do it, I could do it too, right? So what I essentially did was I copied and pasted everything that he did in Evansville. And then I bought my first rental property there. So both of us have a few rentals that are long-term in Evansville. And we don't manage any of those. We just do it exclusively long-term. But then in talking about real estate, we're both very motivated, constantly learning. He mentioned to me, gosh, I want to start an Airbnb business, meaning hosting other properties or doing arbitrage or just something with Airbnb. Because during that time, it was popping off. You could list the ugliest property on Airbnb and you will get bookings like during COVID. So we're like, okay, let's get on the bandwagon. Let's figure this out. And so we started discussing and then we figured that rental arbitrage would be our best strategy because we didn't want to or had enough capital to essentially buy or purchase our own properties. Because at that time, everyone was saying, buy in your backyard. Well, I'm like, Orange County as your backyard is not the easiest place to buy properties.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can go to a condo that's 900 square feet, 2 bedrooms, 1 bath, and it's 700K. So that's just not happening with us, right? So we're like, okay, let's do arbitrage. Let's do it. We started taking a lot of courses, and this is where I learned that joining masterminds, investing in courses and coaching can incredibly expedite your process to reaching your goals. And for someone, you know, I have a master's in public health. I was always kind of like, I could learn it myself, right? I could save money and learn it myself. But I soon found out it's not even about saving money or the fact that you could learn about yourself, but getting to that access to someone who has experience and knowledge that can help you along the way is incredibly valuable. So we started taking a bunch of courses through about midterm rentals, about short-term rentals, about co-hosting, about, you know, financing and also business credit. And that essentially gave us the tools and equipped us with the knowledge and the skills, but also more importantly, the confidence to be a little bit more risky with our decisions. Because a lot of people just get stuck in analysis paralysis and just too afraid to make that step. But what I realized in joining these communities, even if you fall down, you will fall on some pillows. There will be people to pick you up and help you figure out what your exit strategy is or what's another opportunity. You're not going to fall face down on the concrete, hurt yourself, and never want to get up again. That was the true value we found in these courses that really helped us figure out this is something that we want to do.
Hey guys, Katie here. I'm jumping in really, really quick to just have an extra note about co-hosting. Jaina does co-hosting really, really successfully, and we don't talk about what it is or what it means enough. Co-hosting is when you're taking someone else's rental and effectively managing it for them. So that's going to mean that you might be finding tenants. You might be screening them with something like KeyCheck. You might be collecting the rent. You're handling all the maintenance needs. Like, you're making that truly a passive income source for them. Furnish Finder makes this really easy because any co-host can hop in and just run the account for a property as long as like you've gone through the setup process of starting your account. So it's super easy and we've made all the barriers for entry to be able to have a co-host kind of share that responsibility of your Furnish Finder management with you. So, all right, let's jump back in.
So that was essentially our foundation, right? Getting the courses. Then what we did and soon realized, you know, Orange County is just not the spot. It's not the spot for us to do arbitrage because first of all, there's a lot of limitations, really only Santa Ana is a place where you could do short-term rentals. Everything else is so restrictive. And so we figured, you know what? We just kept looking, actually. We just kept looking in Orange County. No one was accepting like our corporate rental lease. But one day we saw a message on one of the Facebook groups that we joined, and it said, hey, does anyone do co-hosting? And right away, Paul jumped on it. Paul said, we do. I will send you a DM. And that was our first client in Benton Harbor, just by a quick out of the blue message on Facebook that became our open door to essentially grow and scale our portfolio, even when both of us had full-time jobs.
Today's episode is proudly sponsored by Furnished Finder, the ultimate platform for hassle-free midterm rentals. Whether you're a seasoned landlord or just getting started, Furnished Finder has everything you need to find your next tenant. With Furnished Finder, you can say goodbye to booking fees, markups, and commissions, and hello to direct bookings. If you're ready to experience all the benefits renting your property for 30 days or more, head over to furnishedfinder.com, where you can list your property for one low annual price. We make it easy to get started.
That's a good point, because we hear that time and time on our show of don't wait to respond to your tenant leads and your, you know, those messages that come directly to you, because they may be looking for other properties at the same time. So like, try to be as quick as you can. And many of our top operators say, I jump on it within 5 minutes, you know, so that's a good reminder. You guys jumped on that opportunity in 5 minutes. And while he may have had other people express interest, you were that first impression that really lasted and formed into a relationship. So that's awesome. Yeah. Let's get into the logistics of some of this stuff. I mean, it needs to be profitable to continue putting your time and effort into it. And I think y'all both have W-2s potentially. We can talk about yours later. I'm excited about that. Some good, we'll get into that later. But sure. You have to figure out, one, what does your partnership look like for the two of you? And then what does that partnership look like with the owner? So let's get into the financial side of some of that and how it works.
Sure, absolutely. So typically with co-hosting, there's a range. You know, there's a range, and that's what you decide with the owner. But typically it's between 20%, although I've seen as low as 15%, to 30% the gross revenue that we collect for co-hosting. Obviously, that's something that you need to discuss with the owner to make sure that they're profitable, or at least they're happy with the amount of money that they're getting, because some owners really don't care about profit. They just want the mortgage to be covered, or they just want a certain minimal amount. That's why it's amazing with co-hosting that it's not about exactly hard numbers, but more about relationships. Going back to our first client, the reason why he liked us is literally because we were Filipino. That's truly it. So that goes back to the relationship side, because if people know, like, and trust you, that's what they care about. They might not care about the fact that we had none of our own properties. Can you imagine us pitching to this property owner? Oh, you know, we don't have our own properties. We haven't started yet. Would you feel comfortable? Probably not. But the fact that he had his mom on the call with us, and she was able to speak Tagalog to us, and I could respond back, at least in English, that literally was all he needed to know that he could trust us, right? So that's where the relationship came from. And he was okay with the numbers. Of course, he's still a businessman. He's actually a pharmacist, so he has too much time. He has no time, I mean, so he needed someone else to manage it for him, right? So it was essentially coming to a point where we decided 20% was what worked for him and also what worked for us. It was a little lower than we wanted, but at the end of the day, we knew that we were still beginners, so it was okay for us to go a little bit lower, because the learning curve that will grow during this first experience is what is most valuable.
Okay, and I think you guys put together for yourselves an S corporation.
Yes.
So what did that look like for you two working together?
Yeah, you know, looking back, I wish we did something different. But again, it's all a learning process. Again, my relationship with my business partner is very unique. Having a partner is always very, it's kind of like an iffy thing, doing business with friends or doing business with family. But the reason what made it so easy for us is because we had the same values, since we were both in the same faith, in the same church. So the way that we structured it was just a 50-50% S corporation. But looking back, eventually we want to change it where he has a separate, you know, LLC, I have my separate LLC, and then we have the company together. But the way that we set it up, you know, still a learning process. It's an S corp with 50-50.
Nice.
So talk to us a little bit about when it comes to co-hosting, exactly what services do you provide for these property owners and what would the benefits be for any of our landlords out there looking? And tell us also, you know, what the biggest gain is for a property owner, right? That says that maybe I don't have the time or the know-how or what it is that what really is the draw there? For all the landlords who might be kind of curious about that space.
Absolutely. The biggest draw for property owners is to get back their own time so they could continue doing the things that they love or do more of the things that they love. Not all property owners are under time limitations. Some can really essentially manage it themselves. For us specifically as co-hosts, we go for the people who really want to be hands-off, right? They really have no time. They thought they could have managed it on their own initially and they realize, I actually cannot. I'm not spending any more time with my baby. I can't even have dinner with my wife because I took on this other thing in addition to my W-2. So the biggest draw for them is essentially time freedom, while still also trusting someone to take care of their property and still making revenue on top of that. So it's essentially three-pronged. You get more time to do what you love. You still make the revenue that you're looking for. And you have confidence that the property managers or the co-host essentially will take care of your property. Because a lot of the times owners are like, well, are there just going to be parties at my property? Or maybe they're not going to take care of it as well as I can because they're remote. How are they supposed to take care of my property when I live next door? How can they do a better job than me? But it comes down to showing them, you know, we have really good communication. We're very transparent. As things come and happen in live time, if you want, we'll give you those updates. Or if you don't like that and you just want us to give you one email every month, we're absolutely adaptable to what they want. We essentially mold around the property owner, and our goal is always to get them the most amount of revenue and keep their properties clean and safe so that they could literally have the peace of mind knowing that their property is in good hands.
All right. I have a great follow-up question here for you, because not only are you co-hosting, but you're doing it from long distance. So give us your top three long distance property management or co-hosting takeaway tips, like something that people who are long distance managing can put into place right away.
And we are going to go into detail on this in a little bit. So just a little teaser for now.
Sure. So number one is all about building a great team. And that's not going to happen overnight. You're not just going to hire and keep the first people that you have on your team, because things happen over time. You kind of find out what their work ethic is or what they're really capable of giving versus what they said they were capable of giving. So that's number one. Number two is having the proper technology. Obviously, we cannot just go to the property and see what's going on. We can't tell if a handle is kind of stuck. We can't smell an odor if we're far away. So having the technology to be able to see what's going on in the property and even like hear what's going on in the property, at least outside, not inside, outside, can essentially give us the power to do this remotely. And then lastly, SOPs, standard operating procedures. If you don't know how to be on the same page with all your teammates with so many moving parts operating like miles and miles away, there's no way you could do this remotely if you don't have everything standardized. So those are the top three.
Ooh, that's a good teaser. I can't wait to dive into those in detail. Ooh.
Yeah.
So to wrap up the finding clients and building the partnership, what does that look like from day one? Do you get paid from day one, or do you get paid once the listing launches?
Hey, landlords, are you ready to level up your rental game and simplify your midterm rental business? Well, get ready to meet your new best friend, KeyCheck. KeyCheck is your all-in-one solution for stress-free property management. With tenant-paid screenings, online rent payment processing, custom lease creation, and a suite of incredible landlord tools, you'll wonder how you ever lived without it. No more chasing down checks or sifting through piles of applications. KeyCheck helps you organize and manage all things landlording in a simple and efficient way. Make landlord life a breeze with KeyCheck, the game changer for modern property owners. Visit KeyCheck.com to unlock the power of stress-free property management and take your rental business to new heights.
We get paid once we get our first renter in there, because you take a commission off of the gross revenue, but it also depends on the status of the owner. If the owner needs help, like currently our Montgomery owner needs help fixing the property before it is actually ready to launch, we do have a pre-launch fee, right? So that's a certain amount depending on the task that we need to do in the coordination. So yes, you can get paid day one as a co-host if the owner still needs help optimizing the property. Another way that you could get paid day one is through our property setup fee. So they're different, a launch fee and then a property setup fee. Essentially, the property setup fee includes us getting professional photos taken, everything that's needed to create the listing so we could start marketing the property. So those are essentially the two types of fees that we have as co-hosts to get paid right away. And then your reoccurring pay comes when it gets rented.
Okay. Nice. I just have two questions to wrap up this section. One, sure. Y'all have long-term rentals and you're paying about an 8% property management fee for those long-term rentals. On our show, we often say that midterm rentals should aim to cash flow 1.5 to 2 times the profit of long-term. So how, and then the midterm rental strategy, while it's not a ton of work, it is still different than the long-term rental mentality. So has it been profitable for you guys moving forward with the co-hosting style? Have you seen the profit and the revenue there versus just sitting, letting someone else manage your long-term rentals? What does it look like?
Absolutely. Just recently, our last stay in Houston, the long-term rental amount that you get monthly, we actually 2.5x'd it. Right. And then Benton Harbor, it's often possible because it's a cheap house, but for some reason that one performs so well, it gets up to three times the long-term rent. So absolutely. And some people ask, wait a second, you have long-term rentals, you know how to manage MTRs, but you don't do MTRs on your own rentals. Why don't you do that? And the reason is because of the particular houses Paul and I have, they're really small. They're 1-1, 2-1, 3-bed, 1-bath. The margins is not worth our time to get maybe an additional $200 a month. Maybe that $200 a month and the amount of time is not worth it for us. So that's why we're like, hey, let's keep it long term. And not only that, to just diversify the strategies we have with real estate, having a mix of long term, but then also operating midterm.
Okay. And then my last question for the section was for those that are looking to jump into the midterm rental co-hosting space, how do you recommend they find clients and secure those clients?
I would say one of the most successful strategies, at least for us, was joining Facebook groups and also joining certain communities and masterminds. Originally, one of the courses we took essentially taught us a strategy where you do a lot of cold calling, you find the address of a property owner that could essentially be turned into a really good midterm rental, and you reach out to them. But the way that we've been getting our clients is because of our network. So everyone always says your network is your net worth. So all of our clients have been found literally from, they were our friends, or they were from communities or courses that we've taken before, because we try as much as possible to give value. Right? Just for free. If you're commenting on Bigger Pockets, the MTR forum, or you're in communities and you're answering questions that beginners have, they realize, oh, they know something. Maybe I could reach out to them, or maybe they could help manage my property. So a lot of it really has been just networking and providing value to communities that we're part of.
Okay. So you have a super interesting story about how ChatGPT helped you with a booking and saved you, I think you said $13,000. So
yes.
Let's hear the backstory there, because very intriguing as we get all these new tech tools and AI and how we can use them to our advantage instead of perhaps being fearful of them.
Absolutely. So the backstory is we got a midterm rental booking through an insurance company, and they had two golden retrievers, and they said, hey, we love your home. We want to book it, and we see that you're pet friendly. And we said, excellent. We did a direct booking, which obviously our property owners love because they don't get all the extra fees from the other platforms. We got all the money up front for this 3-month booking. They arrive at check-in and they realize that the backyard is not completely fenced in. There's one side of the fence where the dogs could run out. And typically we monitor the Ring cameras on the outside and the back when they have check-in, just in case they need additional assistance. And oh my gosh, it looks so dramatic when they're in the backyard. They're going like this.
Oh,
they're going like that. And we're like, oh my God, what is wrong? Something is obviously wrong. We get a text and they say, the backyard is not fenced in. Our dogs are going to run out. And then me and my partner, Paul, were like, yeah, it's not fenced in. They are going to run out.
That is bad.
Yeah. So even though they already signed the rental agreement said, oh, there's no, you know, reimbursement. Obviously, we knew it was on our side. And so Paul said, what did we say? And I said, I don't know, but let's ask ChatGPT. Right. And he's like, okay, you do that. You do that. And I said, okay, yeah, I got it. I got it. So one quick tip, side note, what people don't realize when they're using ChatGPT, you don't just spit out a bunch of stuff to it, ask it to do a lot of different things. The first thing that you want to do in prompting, it's called prompt engineering ChatGPT, is you want to first give it a role. Because if you give it a role, it can direct what kind of answer to give you. If I said, create a message to say sorry to this guest, and you're a lawyer, that's going to be a completely different message. If I say, hey, you're an Airbnb host, what would you say to this distressed guest who realizes that their dogs can't stay because they're going to run out?
Oh.
So that's what I did. I said, you're an Airbnb host, and I specifically described the situation. It's really good to put emotion, because if you put emotion and description like that in ChatGPT, you're just feeding it so much information to know how to respond the best way it possibly can. So my actual prompt was something to the effect of, you are an Airbnb host who runs midterm rentals. You have a guest that just arrived to your property and they are incredibly stressed out because the fence is not fenced in and they have two dogs worried that they are going to run out and now they want to cancel their booking.
Yikes.
How would you write a message? Yeah. How would you write a message to respond to this guest? That's what I put. And then right away, like 3 seconds, it had like the most amazing, most empathetic, most professional, basically text that it had me to send. Now, of course, we quality controlled it, kind of like tweaked it a little bit to adjust to the property owner. So, you know, took that message, sent it to the property owner, right? That's just what we sent after we received their stressed out message. And then all of a sudden, the guest. All of a sudden, the guest said, wow, you guys are so understanding. Thank you so much for really seeing it from our point of view. Actually, you know what? What we're going to do is we're going to call our contractor and they'll make a makeshift fence for our dog so they cannot run out. And we're like, oh, so you're going to pay your own money to make a makeshift fence so that your dogs won't run out? And they're like, yes, thank you so much. We really like appreciate you guys understanding how stressful this, you know, is for us. We really love your house and enjoy the design. And thank you for giving us the option to cancel, but we'll get our contractors to fix it. Literally the next day, they had their own contractors make a makeshift fence so that their dogs couldn't run out. And
wow,
that booking was $13,000. And that's how ChatGPT saved us a $13,000 booking, just by giving us the right words to say in a certain situation.
So is that same fence still in place, or did y'all change the fence when the guest left? What's the update
now? That's a good question. So from experience, we keep the makeshift fence because they let us keep it. We keep it in the garage so that anytime now that we have a guest booking that has a pet, we let them know it's not completely fenced in, but we have a makeshift fence that we could put there so that your dogs will not, and kids will not run out into the street. They're like, oh, that's great.
If it keeps two golden retrievers in, that's a really good makeshift fence, because those guys
get out.
Hey guys, this is Katie again. I'm interrupting our episode one last time because I just feel like everybody has to remember the power of these AI tools and ChatGPT that we have these days. Think about it even in ways when you're writing your furnished finder property description or when you're writing a message to a new tenant. Don't forget to add your own style and your own emotion into the message or into your property description, but you can totally use it to get started. That way you're not just staring at a blank box of text and not knowing where to start. So remember, use those tools. Okay, let's get back to it.
So I think the last thing for this section, do you have any other advice for AI or ChatGPT from that course that you took?
I would just say it's not necessary to take certain courses, but to really learn how to use it to your advantage. The easiest way to use it is really for copy or for responding to messages. So if you learn how to prompt it correctly, even just by doing exactly what we discussed, giving it a role and giving it as much details using emotions, you essentially are much better off than the majority of people who are using ChatGPT. So use it for creating your listings. Use it for even in your welcome guide, the copy. You could also use it for responding to messages. But what's most important is just you start using it so that you get comfortable, because it saves yourself as an operator so much time having to figure out how to respond or even creating listings on different platforms.
I think it's episode 59. 12-year-old Sophia uses ChatGPT to write her listing description. She takes a photo and then starts putting in words like color blue or things like that, and builds her photo description or her listing description from ChatGPT. So very creative. Starting at a young age, up into our professional worlds now too. I love it.
Absolutely. Oh, I have one more tip for ChatGPT. So anytime you talk about a different topic, you want to use a different chat. What people are doing is they're just talking to it all on the same chat, and you're feeding it so much different information. If you're starting a new topic or a new conversation, always start a new chat. So that way it continuously bases its learning off of the same information instead of random things. So that would be another best practice to use.
That was an awesome conversation about ChatGPT, and wow, what a great example that we can all be encouraged by and start trying out the AI world ourselves. So thank you for that. Now, we already said we had a teaser for smart features, especially since Jaina and Paul are managing from Orange County, California, in multiple states that have different needs. So their SOPs have got to be locked in well to not only make sure they do it right the first time, but they communicate it well with the property owners also. So I think Trello is one of your main tools. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Trello?
Sure. We actually now have transferred to Notion.
Okay.
Yeah. But originally we were using Trello just so Paul and I could keep on the same page, like who talked to the handyman, or are the cleaners done, or who is sending the rental agreement. That way, when you have multiple people, even just two, you absolutely need certain software and like management software so that your team could stay on the same place. Because as people who are working W-2s, and maybe in this rare case, it's, I don't hear many people say this, but as people who like their W-2s, we absolutely need to be able to be on the same page, because we don't want to seem like we're being repetitive with certain vendors or missing out on something because we thought the other person was going to do it. So essentially, Trello is great. Notion, I hear Monday is really great for, you know, just property management or just, you know, tasks in general to keeping everything organized.
Okay. And where do you track your occupancy rate, your cash flow, things like that?
Absolutely. So it's a combination of Notion and Google Drive. Everything that is like our truth that essentially has all the backup information just in case something happens to Notion is in the Google Drive. We have different spreadsheets that we use. Paul also uses QuickBooks to do our expense reports so that we know exactly how to do everything and where the business stands. We also every month look at our expenses so we could see which properties are performing the best and maybe why. Because if we feel like, hey, maybe this property is not performing as good as the other ones, what's going on here? Do we need to change our strategy? So essentially, it's a combination of Notion and Google Drive.
Awesome. Okay, well, let's talk a little bit more about other technologies that you're using to manage these properties and make sure everything has a nice flow, especially since you are long distance. And since one or at least I know one of these you said kind of moonlights as a short-term rental, if you will, which I know a lot of times is a little heavier lifting. So let's talk about smart locks, cameras, any other like really like helpful little tech items or things that you can implement in a property that might be helpful for landlords.
Absolutely. So the first thing we could talk about is smart locks. We typically use the Slage smart lock. And the reason why is because we could change the codes easily. You could even have the codes automated. And the way that we do it, here's like a quick tip, is the last four digits of the guest's phone number. That's what we use as the code. So it's easy for them to remember, right? So that's what we do. Obviously, with the locks, it makes it easier for them to do their own check-in and check-out. We don't need anyone to be there. We don't need to spend additional money on a runner to be like, here's the key. Have a good day. You know what I mean? So that is essential just for, I personally feel, short-term or midterm rentals in general. It makes it so seamless of a process to check-in and check-out, which gives you know, your guests a much better guest experience and therefore hopefully better reviews at the end. So smart lock, absolutely super essential. If you just have one tech, it has to be the smart lock. The second thing is security cameras. We really like Ring. The reason why is because you could talk to people, especially being on the remote end. To be able to just communicate who's at the door is a huge hack. Let me give an example. So at our Houston property one time, someone showed up to the front door, ringing the doorbell with a cop. And we're like, oh my God, why is a cop here? There's not even any guests. You know, we're like, oh my goodness, what is going on? I have no idea. Fortunately, the property owner saw and something happened essentially that was a miscommunication with the contractor, but it was so powerful to be able to have that conversation directly because the property owner doesn't live in Houston, right? To be able to explain the process. Can you imagine them not knowing to call? They don't, you know, the neighbors can't speak on behalf of the owner because they've never really seen the owner. So being able to have that conversation with people is essential. And then also being able to have that conversation with your guests. The reason why and number one purpose of having a security camera is, of course, for security. If you have guests that show up to your property and they are not the same people that you see on the photo on Airbnb, that is a huge red flag. And then if you also have guests that are bringing 10 more guests, you could see that right away. Big, big red flag. And then yes, that's where the definitely. Smart lock comes in. Yeah, this is where the smart lock comes in because that's your defense. That's your defense in, you know, providing access to your property owner's home. It's so, so crucial to have that security camera that has that, you know, possibility to talk like the Ring does. A lot of the times too, the door sometimes is a little sticky on our Houston property. So whenever, you know, we see them kind of struggling, we say, hi, you know, this is Gina. Just want to let you know the door is a little sticky. I could see you're struggling. If you just give it a little extra push, it should be open. They're like, there you go. Thank you so much for that. Bye.
Do people jump? Are they like, whoa, who's talking to me?
They do. They typically, well, I try to do is I give a text first, but then sometimes the person on the reservation is not the person showing up. So I try to give a text first to give a warning. Otherwise, I just want to help them in the moment that they're distressed. Right. So I was like, hi. And they're like, oh, hello. So security cameras, 100%. Also in the back, it's, you know, you want to be able to see what's going on in the back, not just the front, because if you have a pool, you know, that could be another safety thing. If you see that there are children running around the pool, you could give a nice little caution saying, hey, I noticed there's a child by the hot tub. Might want to check him out. I don't see any adults back there.
Now, are there privacy limitations when you're talking about a camera in the backyard? Because that's kind of where my head always goes is like, I don't know if I would love being in a property where I know that there's a camera out back that still feels kind of like a private space. So what is your take on that? Or do you educate the tenant on that or what?
Exactly. You're absolutely right. We can totally understand from even from my perspective, like it's like Big Brother. They're like watching my every move. So we're completely transparent. It's in our welcome guide. It's in our rental agreement. It's in our welcome text. We say it often that there are cameras and specifically where are the cameras? For their safety. And most of the time, they're actually thankful. They're thankful like, oh, thank you so much. Because like whatever, like if my dogs are out or something happens. But also not just on the guest perspective, but on our vendors, being a remote operator and like say our hot tubs in the backyard, we see that our vendors are actually providing the services that they're being paid to do. So it's multifunctional. And absolutely, I understand like it's a privacy issue. But if it's an issue for them, then they just don't book, you know, they just wouldn't book the house if they feel that uncomfortable. But we haven't had any issues with that so far.
So one final tool, and feel free to add any more that we may have missed, is not only do you have the awareness through the visual side on the cameras, but I think your W2 ties into a cool noise monitor company or feature as well, that not only detects noise, but is also detect smoking. So tell us about your W-2 and how you use this noise monitor in your properties also.
Sure. So the noise monitors that we could use on our properties is Minute. So Minute essentially measures noise decibels. It doesn't record anything at all. We just want to make sure that that's for privacy, just in case. And the reason why we use this are for multiple reasons, especially when it's an STR and people tend to rent STRs for celebrations. We want to make sure that we are courteous and respectful of the neighbors, especially in a lot of the properties where our owners have homes. They're very quiet, quaint, a lot of older families that live in those properties, and we don't want to be the house that has parties going on all the time. So Minute measures sound with noise decibels so that you can see whether or not a party is potentially happening because the noise is increasing or there's just way higher, way more noise than it is typically. But additionally, Minute specifically also has a feature where it could detect tobacco smoke, right? So for a lot of property owners, they say, no smoking, no smoking, no smoking. And the reason why this is tied to my W-2, as Kelly said, is because my W-2 is in public health. Specifically, I run a countywide quit smoking program. So a lot of the times what people don't realize is when they're telling their tenants that they can't smoke, because obvious reasons, they want to keep their property as clean as possible. They don't want damage. They don't want to have to clean up those butts in the backyard. What a lot of people are not doing is they're not telling their clients where they can smoke. Right? You can't just tell someone who smokes not to smoke. They're going to smoke regardless. So you need to let them know, hey, these are the locations around the property where you can smoke or where you can walk to. So specifically, if you have a non-smoking property, you want to at least in your welcome guide or somewhere inform your guests whether or not you know they smoke or not. Is if you do want to smoke, please go out to the sidewalk because the sidewalk is public space that anyone could use and that's where they could smoke. Or if you're in an apartment and there's actually a smoking area or certain patio section where they can smoke, give them as many options as possible because you want them to feel as comfortable. Because at the end of the day, especially if you have an insurance company claim where it's a family, if they normally smoke at their own house, they're normally going to smoke at your property. You just need to make sure that you at least have that communication so they know where they can't smoke. Mm-hmm.
Good advice. And remember, we have our Furnish Finder house rules, which you can say whether it's a smoking or non-smoking property. Of course, you want that in your lease as well. So those could be some tools of where to communicate it. If you are looking for how to build your house rules, that is a built-in feature in the edit listing process on Furnish Finder, which is really nice. And I use it for all of my house rules for my, what, six doors or whatever, six, seven doors, something like that. I lose count sometimes. And Jaina, for those that might be, let's wrap up with just a little advice for those that might be smokers and are looking to quit, or someone that has a family member that might be looking to quit. You've done a lot of your, or at least your company's done a lot of research on what works and what doesn't. And I was very intrigued by the cinnamon toothpick, if you want to tell us about that.
Sure. Well, I just want to preface by first saying someone who wants to quit smoking is much more successful and powerful than someone who's being forced to quit. So we just have to remember that the choice to quit is on the person as opposed to external factors making them quit for whatever reason. But a lot of people don't realize that the majority of people who smoke want to quit smoking. They actually want to quit smoking, but the difference is they don't know how. Right? Do I just quit cold turkey? Do I just stop and just be stressed and deal with it? One of the things that we do in our program is a lot of people who smoke have an oral infatuation. They have that hand-to-mouth motion. They love things in their mouth. So what we give them is cinnamon sticks or cinnamon toothpicks. Because if you chew on a cinnamon stick or a cinnamon toothpick, first of all, it satisfies that oral infatuation. But afterwards, if you try to smoke after you've chewed on a cinnamon toothpick, the taste is very unpleasant. So they're not really going to enjoy the taste of smoking after chewing on that cinnamon toothpick. So that's just one of the things that we do to help people who have an oral infatuation are trying to quit smoking, is we give them those cinnamon toothpicks to keep their mouths busy.
I love that. Well, Katie, that's all my questions. You have anything you'd like to talk with Jaina about to wrap us up?
No, I think this was great. I think this was such a good introduction to co-hosting, which is something we don't talk about too often, but is a very good and viable option for anybody who is maybe looking to streamline their properties or someone who's also looking to, you know, get into the midterm rental space, but maybe isn't ready to have one completely on their own yet. So I think it's something, a great, great option that is very worthy of a discussion.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today, Jaina. If anyone would like to connect with you, of course, they can find your details in the show notes. But where would you personally like to tell them to reach out to you or communicate with you?
Sure. They could reach out to me or follow me on my Instagram, which is Jaina_Anne. That is JAINE_ANNE.
Perfect. Well, thank you for being with us today. If you're loving our show, please don't forget to like, subscribe, or we would so appreciate your 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Have a great week, everyone, and we look forward to talking with our next guest every Monday. Have a good day. Bye.